Blog Talk Radio.
Word, biblios, many books, taken through the ages, ageless, timeless, prophets, apostles, epistles, the gospel, the righteous, the hostile, the woeful, the wonderful.
On the Sabbath days or on Sundays, it's easy to find me. It's most likely up in your churches where I might be. It's millions over this earth who would tell you that they like me. But realistically, half of them take what I say lightly.
Yo, they just push me off the table like they don't need me. Look me in my face like they don't see me.
What?
Granny's off the church and she won't leave me. Then she comes home from church, but she won't read me.
My name, King James Version, born in 1611. I was made to teach brethren how to reach the kingdom of heaven. I might not be saying the same thing as your reverend. My quote was broke, but it ain't the way it's living.
You probably catch me at your grandma's house, opening Psalms. I was like your grandpa's spouse over in Arm. You catch me in a small jailhouse over in Guam. I speak about the hotel from nowhere to John.
Now travel through my pages, learn about the ancients. Life and death is in me, but some don't want to hear me. Misuse me to conquer many lands. Many men have been slaves for who I am. The saints' blood on their hands.
Governments attempted to get rid of me and still trying. Society refused to listen to me and still dying. I give counsel to disciples on his field grind to remind them that the place they want to be is still
Yo,
dying.
Yo, I'm a bookshelf missionary. I could school the school books plus Dr. Seuss in the dictionary. What's written is power. I'm sitting in the parlor. I'm the only book closed, but I open at any hour.
It's always a nappy head kid with a gold tooth with his hand on my head saying he swear to tell the whole truth.
Yo, dude, they got me on a show called Dusty. Living godly is a must, but don't nobody trust me.
I teach about the old trails. Mortars the bomb. Seven plagues, seven seals. Soldiers the swarm. Rage in the field. Soldiers, storms. The cummins, the horns. You've been warned.
A lot of preachers want me on their team just to make a profit, when all I want to do is give you words of the sacred prophets, so my creators can see believers making progress. I warn them of the dangers and loving material objects.
Open me up, pray to the God of all men, the God of Jacob, Isaac, the God of Abraham. May he open up his plan, why he came as a man. God 12 and spread his truth to every nation through the land.
Yo, we kicked that you was once sober, but you won't show my name, cause when your friends came, you keep turning my front over. What's this on my back? Use me as a cup coaster. Come closer, let me do my job like I'm supposed
Yo,
to.
Yo, there's 66 books in me, good and plenty. But up north, they rip out pages to puff sensey. But the saints study intensely, cause there's riches in me. But to the wicked, I ain't worth
And you can run around wildin', looking in the sky. Or you can read me, choose life or die. Who's right but I, man, a tooth for an eye. The water's broke loose, now the fire's gonna fry.
I'm the Bible.
I'm the Bible. I hold the keys to survival. I'm here to strengthen God's saints and the water's vital.
I'm the Bible. I'm the Bible.
I'm telling you, stop serving these idols. Ain't no other God, the Lord holding that title.
I'm the Bible.
I'm the Bible. Original holy scrolls, comfort lonely souls with the oracles of the moral code.
I'm the Bible. I'm the Bible.
I'm trying to save many men, but any who pretend his kingdom, they won't be getting there. I'm the number one selling book of all time. I done made billions. But if the people don't understand, I ain't happy. So come get with me, sit with me, and I'ma show you mysteries.
Shalom, shalom, shalom. And Laila Tawab, which means good evening or good night in the ancient Paleo-Hebrew. I'm your host, your brother, your friend, as always, Tazapa. I'll be joined shortly here by Hasadiah. She's finishing the final touches on dinner. But shalom, everybody. Man, what's up? Hope everybody had a tawab or a good weekend, a good Shabbat. Hope everybody's in good health, feeling good. Want to send shouts out to the 12 tribes that are scattered worldwide, man. To our brothers here in San Antonio. To our brothers in H-Town, our brothers up in VA, our brothers in Rochester, our brothers and sisters in California, Canada, Atlanta, Albuquerque, and shout out to Kyle Cobb down in Guatemala, y'all. So, man, it's a lot of stuff going on. Too much stuff going on right now, man. Welcome to the show, y'all. Welcome to another episode of Bible Talk. hosted by Blog Talk Radio. A little show that Mashaba, myself, and countless other brothers have been doing for, well over 10 years now. But if it's first time tuning into the show, we are the people of the book, the Hebrew Israelites, Hebrew being our language, Israelite being our nationality. And we are, in fact, the people of the book. We hang our hat on that. We've proven this countless times. We continue to prove this according to the scripture, 1 Thessalonians chapter 5, verse 21, which says, which says, prove all things, hold fast that which is good. And that we do. We prove all things. So we don't just say things. We prove and substantiate everything that we say here at Bible Talk. This is my Tuesday. The format on Tuesdays for me is I do about an hour of news, current events. Before I get into a topic, so that is the format. I want to send shouts out to, special shouts out, ask for prayers, man, for Brother Thai Wong and Sister Wardaya and their family. They're dealing with some very troublesome things over there. So I just want to ask for prayers for Thai Wong and his wife, y'all. Please do that. I also want to remind everyone that this upcoming Sunday, we will be celebrating Passover. This is not the actual Passover. The actual Passover, according to Houston, DA, and Rochester, Albuquerque, and Shabba chimed in on it also. It's April 21st, y'all. It's the actual Passover. But we will be celebrating the Passover this Sunday in San Antonio, man. So if you are close, please come join us. I'm sorry, y'all. I do not have the address. Shame on me. But I'm sure Mashaba has been broadcasting, informing us of this event. He does a great job at all the upcoming events and High Holy Days. All right, y'all. So without further ado, man, a lot of stuff I want to unpack. But let me get Matthew chapter 6 and verse 9, and it reads, after this manner, therefore pray ye, our Father, which art in heaven, hallowed be thy name, thy kingdom come, thy will be done in earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our debts as we forgive our debtors. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil, for thine is the kingdom and the power and the glory forever. Amen. That's the prayer we need to send up in the daily, y'all, so we can get the hell on, man. It is definitely time to go. And we is ready to go. So let's get Psalms chapter 118 and verse 24. This is the day in which the Lord hath made. We will rejoice and be glad in it. So good or bad, happy or sad, the Most High brought you to it. He'll bring you through it, and you'll come out better on the other side of it. Please believe me. All right, y'all. So let's go ahead and jump into this news, man. Like I said, there's a lot of stuff going on, man. I got a lot of windows open too. Let's see. Let's get this one first. I don't know if y'all heard about this. This is 17 minutes ago. This is from the Philadelphia Inquirer. How the Baltimore Bridge collapse could affect Philadelphia's port and your commune or commute. I have another one for this. It says, let me just get this one. The Francis Scott Key Bridge collapsed after a container ship ran into it on the Patapsco River in Baltimore, Maryland, on Tuesday, March 26, 2024. A cargo ship lost power and ran into a bridge in Baltimore early Tuesday, causing the span to collapse into a river and prompting the search for survivors. Officials said they were searching for at least six people who were on the Francis Scott Key Bridge when it was struck by the ship Tuesday morning. Two people were pulled from the water, and one remains in the hospital, according to Maryland Transportation Secretary Paul Winfield. The bridge collapse shut down ship traffic in the Port of Baltimore, a big commercial hub, threatening supply chain distribution. While the impact of Philadelphia remains to be seen, here's what we know about how the collapse may impact the Port of Philadelphia and the lives of area commuters. So this is very, very tragic news, man, and I want to send ask everybody to send prayers up for the people that were involved in this accident and the six people that they're currently looking for, man. I hope they find them. That is very tragic, man, and this is why this is on my to-do list, man, for this year. And I'm about to do it probably next week or after Passover. I'm going to do it after we celebrate Passover. But I'm going to swimming school, y'all. I'm going to learn how to swim. Because this is the stuff that I want to learn how to swim for in case something like this jumps off, man. Because I'm thinking about the people that they rescued, you know. They had to know how to swim. I guess they was holding on to something. But I just don't want to be put in that predicament, you know. And it's shameful, too. I'm 52 this year, and don't know how to swim, man. Don't know how to swim. But I want to ask everybody, man, please send prayers for those people that are missing, for those people that are affected by this. Also, I want to bring out how it talks about how Baltimore is a big shipping port, which makes sense, man. I'm reminded of the series The Wire. They did a whole season over the ports in Baltimore, man. So I'm reminded of that. So this is true, y'all. So look for grocery prices to rise, because they already said they were going to go up anyway. They basically go up anyway every summer. They were also talking about gas prices going up too, which usually go up in the summertime. But make no mistake, this place is coming to its climax, man. Matter of fact, they've already climaxed. Now they're on the downfall. Just like the good book said that it would happen. Just like the Most High predicted, prescribed, prophesied. It's going to happen, man, and we are definitely in those days. So that's what I got on that. I want to switch over to this other article. I want to read this one first. Now, let me get the other one first, man. They kind of go together, though. They kind of go together. Let me get this one. Let me get this one, man. All right, y'all. So this one is from Forbes magazine. And the headline reads, "A psychologist digs into the mental health repercussions of OnlyFans stardom." You don't say. This has mental health repercussions? Me doing whatever I'm doing on fans only, OnlyFans, whatever it is going to have mental repercussions. You don't say. The COVID-19 pandemic led to a change in how sexually explicit content is produced and consumed, with OnlyFans emerging as a prominent platform in this conversation. To grasp the impact OnlyFans has had on our culture, think about the last time you heard someone say something like, "My pay raise is so meager, I might have to resort to starting an OnlyFans to make ends meet." Y'all heard somebody at work say something like that? She makes so much money on OnlyFans, Maybe I should start one too. Mm-hmm. OnlyFans is so empowering to women. You aren't being exploited by men like women in mainstream porn are. But it's still porn and you're still being exploited. You're exploiting yourself, idiot. But okay. While some of these statements may be made tongue-in-cheek, they reflect a shift in how we think about sexually explicit material. OnlyFans and similar platforms have been touted as a symbol of empowerment for content creators, many of whom are female. With so much attention being paid to such platforms, it's important to consider the benefits and drawbacks of this new trend and to understand the psychology at play. Here are three research-backed insights to help gain perspective on OnlyFans and its place in modern society. Number one, female creators on OnlyFans face harsh consequences compared to male creators. A 2021 study found that society perceives women who are engaged in sex work in a devastatingly negative light. Specifically, the researchers discovered that a woman chooses to involve herself in sex work made her a target for harassment, dehumanization, and prejudice. You don't say. The study found that these sentiments were echoed by both women and men, but men were more likely compared to women to dehumanize female content creators. To drive this point home, in 2022, a 20-year-old man drove to an OnlyFans creator's house and broke in to film her as she slept. When he was apprehended, he claimed that she wanted a man to be obsessed with her and stalk her. I hope y'all listening. This was going on in the streets. Although we don't know all the details, the line between reality and fiction is deliberately blurred on platforms like OnlyFans. I'm going to read this again. I don't think y'all heard me. Although we don't know all the details, the line between reality and fiction is deliberately blurred on platforms like OnlyFans. And keep in mind, it's saying, on platforms like OnlyFans. So what other platforms are like OnlyFans? What about TikTok, Instagram, X, all that stuff. It's similar. And I said this, man, on countless broadcasts. They was giving us a preview of what the future looked like in that movie that Arnold Schwarzenegger made years ago, The Running Man. If y'all ain't seen it, go check the movie out. Old movie. But in the movie, he's a contestant on a game show that's based off of real life and everything happens in real time, in which you're running for your life, basically, and they got these hitmen that are chasing you around. I mean, one of them had, like, a flamethrower. The other one had, like, had a bunch of knives. Some they just each had different weapons, and they were, like, skilled in these different weaponries that they were carrying. And they was chasing Arnold Schwarzenegger all around trying to kill him, as well as the other contestants that were participating in this contest. And it was all being televised. It was all being televised, and you could bet on them live. And then they had like a little screen going, and they would have people's comments and stuff on it. Go back and watch the movie, man. They gave us a preview of what was to come. Anyway, Reno. It says, let me read from the top. Although we don't know all the details, the line between reality and fiction is deliberately blurred on platforms like OnlyFans, where the perceived intimacy is easily misconstrued as reality by the fans. Sounds like a porno to me. Number two, sex work is linked to a higher privilege of mental health issues. I'm sorry, a higher prevalence of mental health issues. Creating sexually explicit material for an income is sex work. And the mental health challenges that come with this line of work are well documented. A 2022 study published in Sexuality and Culture found that sex workers were likely to internalize the stigma associated with sex work and feel lonelier as a result. The participants of the study, mostly women, also had low levels of mental well-being. Y'all hear this, right? I mean, keep in mind it says mostly women, because I don't think nobody's paying to see no men take it all off and do whatever they're doing on that site. And then we got to remember, too, it tells us all throughout the scriptures how that the woman is a weaker vessel. And let's not forget, who was beguiled in the garden, y'all? It wasn't the man. Read it on. Although external stigma may potentially be lower for creators on OnlyFans and other platforms compared to in-person sex workers, loneliness and poor mental well-being are not linked to external stigma alone. Based on the transitional nature of creating sexually explicit material, it is possible that the stigma associated with producing such content seeps into the creator's everyday life. Y'all hear this, right? So these creators, they can't separate their online character from who they are in reality. The lines are blurred. You know, they have a saying that says, art imitates life. Art imitates life, man. It really does. It says, isolating them and worsening any symptoms of anxiety and depression. Number three, OnlyFans content creators may be under pressure to create sexually explicit content. They're under pressure to do this. Initially, you know, everybody's thinking about the money. And then you have a girlfriend getting your ear and be like, girl, you effing all these niggas for free. You might as well get paid. I don't know how that works, but anyway. A 2021 report released by the Very Center at NGO that aims to empower victims of commercially sex trafficking found that 30% of the OnlyFans content creators they surveyed had received emails and notifications from the platform informing them that their profile would be taken down if they didn't post new content. Wow. Keep it fresh. 6% of the respondents disclosed to the Every Center that they felt they had very little control over what they created and how the material was used, as they had traffickers who managed their accounts for them, and more than half of the respondents felt that the platform was not doing enough to screen the accounts of creators and subscribers. So they're not screening people. How could you? Moreover, 34% of the creators surveyed said that they experienced negative physical or mental health consequences, according to the report. Some of the common mental health outcomes include anxiety, depression, shame, fear, and low self-esteem. You don't say. Conclusion. OnlyFans is a platform that blends social media with pornography. Oh, okay. Now we know what it is. While such platforms have become normalized in our society, we still don't fully understand their psychological impact on the content creators and society as a whole. While there is a range of content available on OnlyFans, it is primarily used as an intimate, personalized pornography medium. It is important to consider all of the implications before embracing it as a mainstream vehicle of female empowerment or dismissing it as a destructive result of the tumultuous year that was 2020. Good article. All right, so I got some scriptures to go with that, y'all. See, in Ezra chapter 14, we'll start at verse 16. Listen to this. For yet greater evils than those which thou hast seen happen shall be done hereafter. Now, this is their angel, Uriel, talking to Ezra, who's also known as Ezra in the Bible, same person, y'all. He's telling them, man, there's greater evils that's going to come in the times to come. So it was evils happening during the time of Ezra, and he's letting them know it's going to be more evils. You know, like the evils we just read about. Damn social media site for porn. Anyway, 17. For look how much the world shall be weaker through age. And the world is weaker through age. And I know every generation says this, man, about the generation up under them. Man, I don't know what's going on with this generation. Man, y'all's generation, that generation, they even got names for them now. What they got, Generation X, Generation who?
Z.
I don't know. Yeah. All those generations got names for them. But it's letting us know that through age, through time, each generation gets weaker, y'all. And I know y'all can see this in the teenagers of this age, the 20-something-year-olds of this age, and how they move and how they operate, man. A lot has been lost. And this is done purposely by way of Shaitan. Y'all know him as Satan. And he has to do this because he knows that his reign is short. Matter of fact, let me get that one. Hold on, y'all. I know we're in 2 Ezra chapter 14. We're definitely coming back to it. The one I'm looking for, I believe, is in Revelation. And forgive me, y'all, if I'm going in and out, man, because this pollen here in San Antonio right now is giving me the blues, man. As well as everybody else. Bear with me, y'all. I'm looking for it. Here it is. It's Revelation chapter 12 and verse 4. Revelation chapter 12 and verse 12. Let me slow myself down. Therefore rejoice, ye heavens, and ye that dwell in them. Woe to the inhabitants of the earth and of the sea, for the devil is come down unto you, having great wrath. So it's letting us know that on the earth, the sea, basically the whole world, that the devil, also known as the deceiver, same thing, says he's coming down having great wrath. This is why we've got social media pornographic sites. This is why we've got the social media stuff that we got, the Instagram and the TikTok. Somebody told me, I think it was Hasadai told me that now they're showing the kids that on TikTok are showing their body parts, and it's being spread, you know, on TikTok. Basically, it's kiddie porn, y'all. Kiddie porn on the TikTok. Snapchat. Oh, Snapchat. That's what it is, Snapchat. Kiddie porn is going down. But this is all the devices, the works of Satan, man. And his physical offspring, we know him as Esau. Most of the world knows him as the so-called white man or the Caucasians. Because who initiated all these things, man? Who brought all these things to the forefront in their country? You know that, and I was watching somebody on YouTube talking about TikTok and how TikTok in China is totally different than the TikTok over here in the States. The TikTok in China is dealing with, like, academic things. science and mathematics and things of that nature. They have extreme limits to what?
To the usage.
To the usage of it. So you can't be on it all day. But over here, you can do what you want to do, man. And this is why they're trying to, one of the reasons they're trying to take TikTok down, because you got some Edomites, man, that have a conscience. And they're conscious of the things that are being put out and how the country is, the moral fabric of the country is being deteriorated. They never really had any morals anyway, but the morals they had is being deteriorated now. But also because TikTok is uncensored. That's why you can get away with a lot of stuff on TikTok you can't get away with on YouTube. So it's another reason they're trying to take it down. But keeping in mind the scripture, let me read it again from the top, Revelation 12 and 12. Therefore rejoice, ye heavens, and ye that dwell in them. Woe to the inhabitants of the earth and of the sea, for the devil is come down unto you having great wrath, because he knoweth that he had but a short time. And this is why all of these things are happening, y'all. Satan's got to turn up. He knows this is his last stand. So he's definitely got to turn up and go hard. He's trying to hold on to his power, because he knows it's inevitable for him to fall. It is written. It's going to happen. So going back to 2 Ezra chapter 14, verse 17, reading again from the top. For look how much the world shall be weaker through age. Going back to what I was saying initially, that we are in the times that the generations are weaker. Let me give this example. Put ID on blast real quick. So I took ID out to dinner, and we went to a pretty decent restaurant. And I have what did I wear? I had a pair of jeans on and a sweater, and I had my dress shoes on. ID comes downstairs, my daughter. Heidi's 14. She's got a pair of 15 now. She got a pair of damn blue jeans on and a sweatshirt. Yeah, y'all heard me correctly. Because, it is the light. Why is your daughter wearing pants? I've been arguing with her mother about this for the past 2-3 years now. Back and forth. Anyway, this is what she has on. I'm like, that's what you wear? And then she got these dirty Air Force One tennis shoes on. Mind you, she got brand new shoes upstairs. But she claims that those shoes don't match her outfit. Anyway, long story short, this is today's generation. And these schools are terrible because they're attributing to the problem. How my children write essays. And these essays, they write, I read them, and they talk like they're texting. They write like they're texting, like they're talking to their friends or something. And I'm like, how y'all, and I'm talking specifically about my eighth graders, how y'all eighth grade and y'all starting sentences with small case letters? There's no punctuation. Y'all got run-on sentences. Y'all not using proper grammar. I'm like, wow. And this is one of the reasons I had them start doing this. So I still point these things out to their attention and working on these things. Excuse me, y'all. But this is where we are. But the Bible, the book told us this. 2 Ezra chapter 14, verse 17. For look how much the world shall be weaker through age, so much the more shall evils increase upon them that dwell therein. And these evils have increased, man, by way of what we just brought out in this article. Reading on verse 18. For the truth is fled far away. The truth is fled far away. Talking about the truth of the Bible and the truth of the matter are detrimental to your well-being, to your psychological health, to your mental health, to your physical health. This is why you got damn Narcan being sold at Walgreens right now. Not over the counter either. It's in the damn cough medicine aisle. It's in the headache medicine. You can get pick you some Advil up for your headache. And you know what? I might OD later on tonight. So let me grab this Narcan just in case. Real talk, y'all. For y'all not familiar with Narcan, if you're not familiar with what Narcan is, Narcan is used for when people overdose. They take this, whatever, I guess it's syringe full of whatever, adrenaline, and they put it in your chest, and you pop up, and you're okay. Matter of fact, I believe it was the same thing that John Travolta used in his playing his character. I forgot his character's name in Pulp Fiction with, what was her name? The skinny girl he took out to eat, the actress. Damn, what is her name? She played in Kill Bill.
Uma Thurman.
Thank you. In the movie Pulp Fiction, he takes Uma Thurman out, the boss's wife, and they're doing drugs, and she ODs, and he rushes her to his friend's house who has some Narcan. And they find it and put it in her chest, and she pops up, she's back alive. Well, they're now selling this in your local Walgreens. But the book told us this. Read it again, verse 18. For the truth is fled away. And it is, man. The truth of the matter that drugs are detrimental to your health, that OnlyFans is detrimental to your health, that all this social media stuff is detrimental to your health. It says, and least hard at hand. For now, haste it the vision to come which thou hast seen. Then answered I before thee and said, behold, Lord, I will go as thou hast commanded me and reprove the people. So this is what Ezra said during his time. And this is our jobs as prophets, as teachers, to reprove the people, to reprove our people, man, to show them what's wrong, to show them how they're defiling themselves, to show them how they're going against the Most High. This is our job. We've been commissioned to do this. It tells us in Isaiah chapter 58 and verse 1, it says, cry aloud. Spare not. Then it goes on and said, don't spare the young or the old, man. Don't spare nobody's feelings. And you know, the thing about our people is when we talk to our people, we tell them about their shortcomings, about the things that defile them, or something as simple as their health, they automatically go on attack mode. The attack mode is the defense mode, or the defense mechanism to bag you up off of them. Because they don't want to hear the truth, man. Truth is not popular. Read this again. It says, behold, Lord, I will go as thou hast commanded me and reprove the people which are present. But they that shall be born afterwards, he said, but the people that's going to be born after my generation, after I'm gone, who shall admonish them? Said, who's going to check them? Because this is how bad he saw our community back in his time. Our community is way worse now. When I say community, I'm talking about the Israelite community, so-called blacks, Hispanics, Native Americans that are living here in the Americas. How worse is it now? That's why he says, who shall admonish them? Thus the world is set in darkness, meaning what? The world don't have the truth. And we use this term loosely, man, as Israelites. We'll say stuff and use terms like, oh, well, they're in the world. They're worldly. The world does this. The world does that. You know, just to explain, these are the only conversations that we have amongst ourselves in which we understand the terminology that's being used. We say they're worldly or they're in the world, meaning they don't know no better. They're in darkness. And some of the time it'd be people that we've tried to drop the truth on or give the truth to, and they reject it. They're not receptive to it. And so they walk on in darkness with no light. And remember, light represents wisdom or no answers about the things that they're going through, about the things they're experiencing, or how to get out of it or how to have relief going through it. Here's why it says, read it again, thus the whole world is set in darkness. And they that dwell therein are without light, man. No wisdom. No way out. Which brings me to my next article. Before we get this article, I don't think God's gonna post his bail, but he's definitely going to jail. He's definitely going to jail. All right, y'all. The Freak Monster, Diddy himself, and I ain't covered none of this, y'all. I've been hearing a lot, reading a lot about it. I was just letting it unfold before I even touched it. But this is from NPR. It says, Holmes linked to Sean Diddy Combs, raided by law enforcement. So, 5-0 raided Diddy's cribs, Freak Monster. Homeland Security officials on Monday conducted coordinated raids of two homes connected to music mogul and entrepreneur Sean Diddy Combs. He has recently become the subject of lawsuits alleging sexual assault. Teams of federal agents, including Homeland Security investigative officials, were seen conducting coordinated raids at two homes associated with rapper Sean Diddy Combs on Monday. Now, I've seen some on YouTube. I don't know how true it is, but it makes sense. But when I read this article, I'm like, man, what the hell is Homeland Security doing these raids on P. Diddy's cribs? But allegedly, he's been accused of sex trafficking. So that's why Homeland Security is getting involved, which makes sense. When asked to confirm the surprise searches, authorities said that, all right, Homeland Security, New York executive law enforcement actions as part of an ongoing investigation with assistance from Homeland Security Los Angeles, Homeland Security Miami, and our local law enforcement partners. This man, he got three different locations of Homeland Security raiding all of his properties at the same damn time. He going to jail, y'all. I would really be surprised if he didn't go to jail or something happened to him first, you know, like they did Epstein when he went to jail. They claimed that he committed suicide, which I don't believe. He had too much dirt on people. And I believe that Puffy got a whole bunch of dirt on some people because this new lawsuit that was brought against him, the dude, I forget his name, was dropping all kind of names. He dropped Usher's name. Matter of fact, one of the accusers with the lawsuit, she dropped Aaron Hall's name. The music producer dude that's spilling the beans on him now, and he only talking because he didn't get paid, by the way. He dropped what's Chris Brown name, Meek Mill's name, Young Miami's name was dropped. It was a lot of names. Cuba Gooding Jr.'s name was dropped. A lot of names got dropped in this lawsuit. Anyway, it says, in a brief statement they added, we will provide further information as it becomes available. Homeland Security officials did not respond to requests for NPR to clarify if Combs was the target of the raids. So they just saying it's at his property, but they couldn't confirm whether or not it was about him. There's an ongoing investigation. When they use terminology like ongoing investigation and you goddamn Homeland Security, man, somebody went to jail. The Los Angeles mansion connected to Combs is in the Homely Hills neighborhood and is not owned by the music mogul, but it has been connected to Combs' company, Bad Boys Film Production, according to KTLA in Los Angeles. The residence in Miami was purchased by Combs in 2021. Aerial footage from KTLA in Los Angeles showed multiple squad vehicles stationed near a large home. Meanwhile, teams of agents in bulletproof vests appeared to remove several items from the home, and officials were seen questioning several people. The reason for the raid is unclear, but they come on the heels of a lawsuit alleging that the 54-year-old was the leader of a criminal enterprise that could qualify as a widespread and dangerous criminal sex trafficking organization. Damn. As NPR previously reported, Combs has become the subject of several civil suits accusing him of sexual misconduct, including rape and assault. Combs has denied all accusations of sexual misconduct. He has not been criminally charged with any of the allegations. Messages to Combs' lawyer, Benjamin Bathman, seeking comment were not immediately returned. In November 2023, singer Cassie Ventura, who had signed a 10-album deal with Combs' Bad Boy Entertainment when she was 19, accused Combs of years of sexual misconduct, harassment, sex trafficking, and rape. Ventura's civil suit was filed in New York Superior Court under the state's Adult Survivors Act, a New York law permitting victims of sexual abuse a one-year window to file civil actions regardless of the statute of limitations of the crimes themselves. More recently, producer, his name is Rodney Lil Rod Jones, that's the one who dropped all these names, who worked on Combs' latest release, the Love album, Off the Grid, accused the famed rapper of sexual assault in a civil suit filed in federal court. The suit claims that Combs groped Jones repeatedly, and during the making of the album, Combs forced Jones to solicit sex workers, take illegal drugs, and more. The suit also names others close to Combs as co-defendants. In an Instagram post last December, Combs denied he did any of the things he was accused of and vowed to fight for his name. Guess who's going to death tonight? Yeah. All right. So let's get Isaiah chapter 5, man. Whew. Like I said, man, I was just standing by to see what unfolded, and a lot has unfolded. You want Isaiah chapter 5 and verse 11, and it reads, "Woe unto them that rise up early in the morning." Listen to this, y'all. He told me, this is our people, man. Let me read it again. Isaiah chapter 5, verse 11. "Woe unto them that rise up early in the morning, that they may follow strong drink, that continue until night, till wine inflame them." Who do this? This is our people, man. This is our people, whether you're in the music industry, you a dough boy, you live in the street life, you an Instagram wannabe, or whatever you call yourself trying to be. This is deep. Our people really think that that's the life. But our people, we don't just wake up drinking. We just wake up smoking. We just high all day. I remember watching Deion Cole. He did an interview, and he talked about how he morning bakes. And this dude said he was literally so high all of the time that he would have to write his jokes down so he wouldn't forget them. He said he would write his jokes down so he wouldn't forget them, y'all. This is what he said in the interview. I think it was on what's that damn thing they got? Unsung or the one that TV One got. I forget the name of it. But he said, yeah. He go on stage, he just be up there laughing and trying to remember his jokes, and he couldn't because he would be high. And it became part of his act, part of his gimmick, to where he did this everywhere he went. He would perform with the notepad, and when he didn't do it, people asked him where the notepad at. And he was like, I don't need the notepad no more because I can remember my jokes. And they would get mad and ask for the damn notepad. That's a sad existence, man. So you go through your whole life high. How can any reality really hit you? I used to smoke weed. I can't imagine being high all of the time. Nothing would have ever got done. I would have never took care of no business. As a matter of fact, that was me when I was smoking weed. I ain't take care of business. Things would pile up. Things would get out of hand. I literally was not spending quality time. I used to be. I'm not proud of it. Like this around my children. So those quality moments as a parent, you don't even remember. Because your ass is high. People really live like this, y'all. How bad is your reality or the demons that you got on you that you got to escape your reality 24/7, escape your responsibilities 24/7? But the Most High told us, let me read this again, man. Isaiah chapter 5, verse 11. Woe unto them that raise up early in the morning, that they may follow strong drink, that continue unto night. Like, this is an all-day thing. You're influenced all day. Till wine inflames them. I mean, these substances, they just control you. Now, the scripture's talking about wine, but wine is also talking about indulgence. And our people are indulged in whatever drug, illicit drug, that's out there this day and age. Verse 12. It says, in the heart and the vial, the tabret and the pipe and the wine are in their feast. Now, notice how I mentioned, because it's talking about the harp, the vial, the tablet, and the pipe, all musical instruments. It said music is involved with these drugs and this drinking. And all our people, man, what nigga ain't running around talking about he want to be a rapper? He want to be in the industry. Oh, I'm a producer. Or I'm an artist. They don't say rappers no more. They didn't got ghetto sophisticated. I'm an artist. Trying to make it in the industry. And y'all seeing what the industry is right now. It's a bunch of freak monsters. I should have got the girl name, but she does a YouTube. But she says she used to be a singer and how she had recorded at a couple of Diddy studios. She said she had never met him. But she was talking about how she was young at the time and her friends, they were really begging and trying to get into the industry by any means necessary. And she was talking about the things that they would do and the things that she's seen young girls do just to get into the music industry, how they got to sleep with all these men, how they got to be degraded, how they got to be passed around just to make it an entertainment. She was validating all the stories that everybody's told and nobody's listening to because everybody wanted to dismiss them as being crazy, like they dismissed Jaguar Wright as being crazy. Now they're saying, oh, you know what? She's been telling the truth this whole damn time. But now it's coming out, man. It's no different than all these IG models. It's all on the gram. Doing what? Now, y'all heard me read how the dude showed up at this girl who had an OnlyFans page at her house to record her sleeping. Stuff gets real, man. This is our people. We'll do anything to make it in stardom. This is why y'all hear about the blood sacrifice, or we say the term, we use this term loosely, you sold your soul. That's a real thing. What does it mean to sell your soul? It means you give up all your principles. You give up your belief in God. You give up your moral values. You'll do anything. You sell yourself. What do you think Diddy did? Long time ago, he sold himself. And now he's inspiring other people, and he did inspire other people to sell themselves. Because remember, he had Usher. Before he ended up later on giving them to Jay-Z. Diddy was a grown-ass man. And what kind of mom, our people, man, Usher mama let Usher stay with Diddy, a grown man. I think Diddy was like in his mid-20s, and Usher was like a teenager. They living together, sleeping in the same bed, doing mature stuff. Y'all remember the damn Nice and Slow video or song Usher made? Usher made that song when he was like 16, 17. I'm talking about Nice and Slow. I'll F you right, I will. Yeah. Remember that? Y'all go back and watch Surviving R. Kelly. I had mixed feelings on that. Let me tell you why. Because I'm like, man, why would these parents keep setting their kids up for failure like this? For money. Money and fame, man. Money and fame. Yeah, this one dude. Man, it was a couple. This lady was married to this dude, and they presented their daughter to R. Kelly at one of his damn concerts. This was after all the rumors and allegations and all the civil suits. They already knew about him. But you still trying to get your daughter to meet him? This is us, man. Verse 12. So when Isaiah touched 5, verse 12, and the harp and the vial. And the tablet, I'm sorry, and the tablet and pipe and wine are in their feast. Once again, you're mixing music with drugs and alcohol. This was written thousands of years ago, y'all, but it's still going on this day and age. It says, but they regard not the work of the Lord. Try to give a high nigga a flyer or some literature about the Bible or who they are as a person. I can't tell you how many times, man, we went to street teaching and afterwards we find literature all on the ground, all in the trash, or we go to the MLK march and we walking back, we seeing the literature we just gave somebody on the ground.
Okay.
Our people ain't trying to hear it, man. They're more concerned with being high. And making money. Money has become our God, our power. It says, but they regard not the work of the Lord, neither consider the operation of his hands. And you know damn well, Puffy ain't considering that the Most High is in control. Because who's got their hands reached out to collect and issue judgment on all the things that he's done this far? It's the Most High. But our people don't consider this when they high and living their best life, when they popping bottles and up in the club, making it rain, and all the other debauchery that our people be doing, we don't consider that the Most High is watching you. Excuse me, y'all. Verse 13. Therefore, my people are going into captivity. I told you, this is talking about our people. Read it again. Therefore, my people are going into captivity, which we are in captivity, this day and age, in captivity, because they have no knowledge. What's the main reason we're in captivity? We have no knowledge of the Most High. Hosea 4 and 6, my people are destroyed for lack of knowledge. It says, because they have no knowledge, and their honorable men are famished. Our honorable men are supposed to be our leaders. It says they're famished, meaning they don't have any answers. They ain't got no answers to the black man's plight, to the brown man's plight, to the black man's problem, the brown man's problem. They ain't got no answers for us. You know what they damn answer be? Go vote. Who you voting for? Become a Democrat. And then they get these entertainers to pledge for him, and these church niggas to pledge for him so you can vote for them. And our people keep falling for it, man. Hook, line, and sinker. Bobby, I was watching a movie about Shirley Chisholm and her running for president, trying to change the world, man. This is our people. And she was so inclusive in her political campaign. So inclusive, right? She didn't want to be known as the black candidate for the presidency of the United States. She wanted to be known, but she wanted to be the people's candidate, right? Only in the end to have a black dude stab her in the back. To stab her in the back. Don't you know you shouldn't have been doing that no way? That's not the answer. And she was just left, man. She had this bewildered look all over her face. Her character was played by, what's her name? Regina King, which is a fascinating actress. This dumbfounded look on her face, hopeless look on her face, which most of our people end up having once they see that this place was never established for us. They always talk about this, the system is broke. Well, no, the system is working just fine. It wasn't meant for you, so you can't fix it. It's not broken for them. It's not even really broken for us. It's the position the Most High wanted us to be in because of our disobedience to him. And that's why he says, read it again, verse 13 in the middle, and their honorable men are famished. No answers. And their multitude dried up with thirst. And this is why you got our people walking around just thirsty for answers. Some of us anyway. The ones that are conscious. The ones that ain't high as hell all the damn time. High as they mind. The ones that's just not influenced or housed their social media sites, the dopamine. Thirst, dying of thirst, dry up, no answers, and keep making mistake after mistake after mistake. Verse 14, therefore, hell hath enlarged herself and opened her mouth without measure. Hell is a condition, y'all. It's not a place. But if I had to put a place on hell, it would definitely be the United States of America. It would definitely be the Americas. That's across the board. Hell, the world as a whole has become hell. Our people are catching it. It says, and their glory and their multitude and their pomp, and he that rejoice shall descend into it, man. Oh, my goodness. You living it up, trying to hold on to this place, trying to be a part of it. The Most High said, you're going to descend into it. Our people running around talking about America is the greatest country in the world. Nigga ain't even got a passport. So how can you compare? Huh? Tell me, please. I ain't got no passport, and I ain't been to no other countries. But I've done enough research to know that this is not the greatest country in the world. It says, verse 15, and the mean man, here we go, the mean man shall be brought down. What's going on with Puffy now? Diddy? Take that. He's being brought down. Just like Epstein was what? Brought down. You know, and I'm reminded too, man, everybody keep bringing it up. How Cat Williams predicted that these type of people are going to be took down in 2024. He predicted. Y'all go back and watch that Shannon Sharp interview with Cat Williams. Another thing he said is just keep standing out. He said, man, Puffy be wanting a party, and you got to tell him no. He said, you got to tell him no. But not enough people told him no. For fame, success, stardom. Verse 15. And the mean man shall be brought down, and the mighty shall be humbled. and the eyes of the lofty shall be humbled. You might be living it up now. What's that old saying? Laugh now, cry later. Mashaba was bringing out on this broadcast Esau's mentality. I'd rather reign in heaven. I'm sorry, I'd rather reign in hell than to serve in heaven. And a lot of our people have adopted that mentality to where if, even if it is a heaven, and it is, they say, well, even if it is a heaven, I don't want to go. I don't want to be told what to do. And I remember Biggie made that damn song. She said, if it's a heaven, I don't want to go because God would be too strict, telling me I can't smoke weed, I can't get my Jimmy waxed. And he didn't use those term, that terminology, but y'all familiar with Biggie. Y'all know the song I'm talking about and the lyrics. This is our people's mentality. Verse 16. But the Lord of hosts shall be exalted in judgment. The Most High is going to be raised up. Oh, you're going to get this work. You're going to get this work. Or Bill Duke with that long finger. You know you're effed up, don't you? You know you're effed up. But the Lord of hosts shall be exalted in judgment, and God that is holy shall be sanctified in righteousness, man. No doubt. No doubt, man. So, y'all, that covers it for the news. You're pretty good right there, man. Go too far over. That does it for the news. We're going to take a brief, brief intermission and come back with the class on the other side, the Old Silence Part 2, y'all. So give me just a moment. I'll be right back and regroup. All right, y'all, we are back. Told you it was going to be brief, man. All right, so we're going to continue with the class. Never Wax Tail, the Old Silence, Part 2, y'all. So what we're going over is the Dark Ages, spinning off of 2 Ezra chapter 7, verse 30, the Old Silence. Read that real quick.
Second Ezra, chapter 7, verse 30. Take thou no indignation at them which are...
Ain't it. Is that the front door?
Yes, it's really good.
Yeah, please. Using the wrong chapter?
Yeah, I'm
ready. All right, y'all. Second Ezra, chapter 7, and verse 30. Reads, and the world shall be turned into the old silence 7 days, like as in former judgment, so that no man shall remain. Now, what this is talking about, the old silence, when the Most High stopped dealing with us, And then it says, and no man shall remain, meaning no man of wisdom shall remain, because the Most High was not dealing with us no more. We didn't have the book anymore as a guide to lead us. So we're basically winging it. And this era is known as the Dark Ages. And because we truly were in the dark without the wisdom of the Most High, which is the light, we didn't have any answers. We didn't have a guide. We was just, like I said, winging it. So this is what I want to get to, but I'm coupling this with Revelation chapter 6. And we're working our way on down to it, verse 5. But before we get verse 5, we got to get some other parts of Revelation chapter 6 and verse. We are in verse 1. Let me just read it again from the top. And I saw when the Lamb opened one of the seals, and I heard, as it were, the noise of thunder, one of the four beasts saying, come and see. Now, I went over this last week. A seal is basically a prophecy. So these prophecies are being opened and being opened by Christ. These beasts are the angels, all right? Verse 2. And I saw, and behold, a white horse, and he that sat on him had a bow, and a crown was given unto him, and he went forth conquering and to conquer. Now, I went over this last week also, when it says that it was a white horse. White represents righteousness. You can reference Revelation chapter, where we at? Hold on, y'all. Let me give him the notes, right? I don't want to get out no more information. I believe it's Revelation 19 and 10. Let me check this. No, that's not it. It's Revelation. It is in chapter 19. Hold on, y'all. Revelation 19:8. And to her was granted that she should be arrayed in fine linen, clean and white. For the fine linen is the righteousness of saints. So we found out that the fine linen is the righteousness of saints, and white represents righteousness. So going back to Revelation chapter 6 and verse 2, and I saw, and behold, a white horse. So this white horse, and we went over this last week, is Christ, his righteousness, and a horse represents power. And you can cite Ecclesiastes chapter 10 and verse 7, going straight to the point on that one. And I brought out the example last week, too. When you buy a car this day and age, you buy it according to its horsepower, or that's how they gauge the speed and the power of the car is based off its horsepower. So the horse represents, this white horse represents righteousness, and it represents power. And this was Christ. And he that sat on him had a bow, and a crown was given unto him, and he went forth conquering and to conquer, which he did. And we know that this Christ conquering and him being righteous was extended to us by way of the Most High's commandments, and by way of when the Most High gave us the land of Canaan to go in and to conquer it under our brother Joshua and our brother Caleb. All the conquering they did. Y'all can go back and y'all can see the book of Joshua for that reference. And you can also reference Deuteronomy chapter 7, verses 1 through 7. And the Most High gave us the land. So just recapping that part, and like I said, that was extended to us, the conquering part. So let's jump down and let's get caught up. Let me read this verse again. Revelation 6 and 2. And I saw, and behold, a white horse. And he that sat on him had a bow, and a crown was given unto him, and he went forth conquering and to conquer. So this is talking about Christ. Like I said, this was later extended down to us, to the Israelites, and approve this. You good over there? Let me get you over here, if possible. So let's go to the Holman's Bible Atlas, y'all. We're going to go to page 75. We're going to go to page 75. I'm going to read 75 and this is 76 also.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, read the title.
Conquest and Settlement. The death of Moses closed an important chapter in the life of Israel, but a new challenge lay before the people. Poised beyond the Jordan in the plains of Moab, the tribes of Israel beheld the land promised to Abraham.
So we looked at the land that was promised to our forefather Abraham, the same land that was promised to our forefather Isaac, promised to our forefather Jacob, that Moses actually saw before he passed. Read.
To claim their inheritance would not be an easy task.
Wouldn't be an easy task. Why wouldn't it be an easy task? Read.
Canaan had a large mixed population who would not yield territory willingly.
They would not yield this territory willingly. It was good land. It's also known as the Fertile Crescent. So in order to get this land, we had to conquer them. We had to kill them. Hold this in Deuteronomy chapter 7, verse 1. We are transitioned over, y'all, to the class. This is the class now. Read.
When the Lord thy God shall bring thee into the land whither thou goest to possess it and have cast out many nations before thee, the Hittites and the Girgashites and the Amorites and the Canaanites and the Perizzites and the Hivites and the Jebusites, seven nations greater and mightier than thou.
So these seven nations are all Hamitic nations. These are the descendants of Ham. And the, mind you, name the Canaanites, which we just read out of this Bible Atlas. It was part of their group. We had to take out all of these people. How are we going to take them out? Read.
And when the Lord thy God shall deliver them before thee, thou shalt smite them and utterly destroy them.
Through killing. This is how you conquer. Read.
Thou shalt make no covenant with them, nor shew any mercy unto them.
This is all in part of conquering. This is warfare. You need warfare to conquer. I'm going to read this again in Revelation chapter 6 and verse 2. And I saw, hold that. Mm-hmm. And I saw, and behold, a white horse, and he that sat on him had a bow. And a crown was given unto him. And he went forth conquering and to conquer. Once again, this is talking about Christ, but this also extends to us and our conquest after we came out of Egypt. The conquest of our land, the land of Israel, y'all. Read on in Deuteronomy.
Neither shalt thou make marriages with them.
Mm-hmm.
Thy daughters thou shalt not give unto his son,
mm-hmm.
nor his daughter shalt thou take unto thy son.
Mm-hmm.
For they will turn away thy son from following thee,
mm-hmm.
and that they may serve other gods.
So the Most High did this for that reason. He also did it so we could stay a pure nation, a pure race, man. Read.
So will the anger of the Lord be kindled against you.
But most of all, he didn't want us committing idolatry, going against him, not worshiping him. He don't like that. What verse you in?
The latter 24.
Finish it.
And destroy thee suddenly.
Now, go back to the Holman's Bible Atlas, page 75. Read that part again.
To claim their inheritance would not be an easy task. Canaan had a large mixed population who would not yield territory willingly.
We just read that, right? You know?
The Canaanites lived in fortified cities along the coast and in the great valleys. Amorites dwelt in the hill country, while the Amalekites roamed the Negev, Numbers 13:29. Other groups, Jebusites, Hivites, Perizzites, and Neo-Hittites, occupied the villages and towns of the land, referenced in Joshua 3:10, 9:1, Deuteronomy 7:1. As Joshua assumed the mantle of leadership from Moses and prepared the tribes for battle, he knew only the power of God could grant the fulfillment of the ancient promise to his forefathers. The books of Joshua and Judges tell the story of conquest and settlement.
The story of what?
Conquest and settlement.
The story of conquest and settlement. Going back to Revelation chapter 6, verse 2. And I saw, and behold, a white horse, and he that sat on him had a bow, and a crown was given unto him, and he went forth conquering and to conquer. Once again, this is Christ, but extended to us and our conquest of the land of Israel, which we're reading about now. Continue reading in the Bible Atlas.
Joshua concentrates on the initial phase of the process, while Judges' struggle of the tribes to possess the land in the face of pressure from neighboring people. A careful reading of both books makes two things clear. First, the conquest of the land was not accomplished in one generation.
And it wasn't. Read. We're going to get to that too.
The conquest was a process that extended over many generations and was not completed fully until the time of David and Solomon.
To the time of who?
David and Solomon.
Y'all hear that? I'll go back and read if y'all didn't know. That's why David was killing so many of those Philistines, remember? That's why he did so much war. And the Most High told him that he couldn't build him a temple because he had too much blood on his hand, because he was finishing the job that Joshua started, man, way back in the book of Joshua.
1000 to 922 B.C. David was the first king.
All right, stop there. You gonna read? Yeah, read the rest of it.
David was the first king who ruled over a territory that included all the lands allotted to the tribes.
David was the first king. All the land that the Most High gave us. Let's get Psalms 144 and verse 1. David was the first king who had all that land that the Most High gave us, man. The land that Moses saw. The land that he promised our forefathers, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. David was the only one who capitalized on it and seen it. Did I say Psalms 144, right?
144.
Mm-hmm, verse 1.
Okay.
Yeah, read that.
Blessed be the Lord, my strength, which teaches my hands to war.
Read it again.
Blessed be the Lord, my strength, which teaches my hands to war.
Read.
And my fingers to fight.
Who taught the Israelites how to fight?
The Lord.
The Most High taught us how to fight. He taught us how to go to war. Let's get 1 Chronicles chapter 18, verse 1. Because remember, we got this last week too, y'all. The Most High tells us in Exodus 15 and 3, it says, the Lord is a man of war. The Lord is his name. Mm-hmm.
Now, after this, it came to pass that David smote the Philistines and subdued them.
See, told y'all, I ain't making it up.
And took Gath and her towns out of the hand of the Philistines.
Read on.
And he smote Moab, and the Moabites became David's servants and brought gifts. And David smote Hadarezer, king of Zobah, unto Hamath.
You see how David is conquering, man, all these people, all these nations? This is what it's talking about in the book of Revelation.
Keep reading.
Yeah, keep reading. What verse you in?
3.
I'm catching up with you. All right, I'm there. Go ahead.
And David smote Hadarezer, king of Zobah, unto Hamath, as he went to establish his dominion by the river Euphrates. And David took from him 1,000 chariots and 7,000 horsemen and 20,000 footmen. David also held all the chariot horses, but reserved of them 100 chariots. When the Syrians of Damascus came to help Hadarezer, king of Zobah, David slew of the Syrians 22,000 men.
David was so powerful, other nations had to form leagues with another nation just to ward his army off. And they still lost. Because who taught his hands the war? The Most High. And David, you read, he was righteous. The Most High said that David was a man after his own heart. So the Most High was definitely with him. Read.
Then David put garrisons in Syria, Damascus.
A garrison is what we would call modern day a fort. You know, like Fort Sam. Fort Sam Houston. Joint Air Force Base San Antonio, whatever, Fort Knox, Kentucky, whatever fort you might live by, Fort Sumner. All of those are military bases. That's what David put up. He put up military bases in these people's lands. Read.
And the Syrians became David's servants and brought gifts. Thus the Lord preserved David whithersoever he went. And David took the shields of gold that were on the servants of Hadarezer and brought them to Jerusalem. Likewise, from Tibbeth and from Chun, cities of Hadarezer, brought David very much brass, wherewith Solomon made the brassen sea and the pillars and the vessels of brass. Now when Tou, king of Hamath, heard how David had smitten all the hosts of Hadarezer, king of Zobah, he sent Hadoram, his son, to King David to inquire of his welfare and to congratulate him because he had fought against Hadarezer and smitten him. For Hadarezer had war with Tou, and with him all manner of vessels of gold and silver and brass. Them also King David dedicated unto the Lord with the silver and the gold that he brought from all these nations.
So David got rich. Read.
From Edom. And
from who?
From Edom.
Read.
And from Moab.
That name's very important. Edom. Remember that, y'all. Read.
And from the children of Ammon. And from the Philistines. And from Amalek. Moreover, Abishai, the son of Zeruiah, slew of the Edomites in the Valley of Salt 18,000.
And I hope we're seeing in verse 11 how many different nations. Matter of fact, everything we read, all these nations, all this land that David was conquering, which goes to what we read in Revelation chapter 6 and verse 2. Read.
And he put garrisons in Edom. And all the Edomites became David's servants. Thus the Lord preserved David whithersoever he went. So David reigned over all Israel and executed judgment and justice among all his people. All
right, that's it. Now I want you to go to back to the Holman's Bible Atlas, page 105. Page 105.
Page 105, the wars of David. Throughout his reign, David fought a series of both defensive and offensive wars against surrounding peoples who threatened his kingdom. In the process, not only did more land allotted to the tribes come into the possession of Israel.
Read that part again.
In the process, not only did more land allotted to the tribes come into the possession of Israel.
So that's the conquering. It's talking about in Revelation chapter 6 and verse 2. David, our forefather, conquered all of this land. Read.
But David extended Jerusalem's influence and control beyond Palestine into Syria.
You see all the control that David had? Read.
To accomplish this considerable feat, David employed a professional army composed of mercenaries drawn from various backgrounds, including Hittites, Philistines, and Ammonites, as well as Israelites, the 30, an inner circle of fighting men of unquestioned loyalty to David.
These are David's mighty men. What verse, what part are you in right now? Read on.
Spearheaded his elite troop, 2 Samuel 39, the sequence of David's wars, especially the conflict in the Transjordan and Syria, can be interpreted in different ways.
Now read the other highlight.
David's accomplishments. David's prowess as a military leader greatly enlarged the territory under Israel's control.
And that's what I want us to focus on, the territory, because remember Revelation chapter 6 and 2, talk about conquering. David was conquering territories. Read.
Many of the strong cities of Palestine previously unconquered, such as Beth Shan and Jerusalem, now were in Israelite hands. The Jezreel Valley, the Shephelah, all of Galilee, as well as the Transjordan with its vital trade route were a part of David's kingdom. Ammon, Moab, Edom, and certain Aramean kingdoms paid homage to David by sending tribute to the court at Jerusalem. David confined the Philistines to the southern coast and maintained friendly relations with Phoenicia. By the time of his death, about 960 BC, David had carved out a kingdom of considerable proportions.
Considerable proportions. Y'all hear this, right? Read.
And placed Israel on the political map.
See, so David, because we became a nation when we were in Egypt. That's where the Israelites became a nation. We came out, and we had those conquests of Joshua and the rest of our forefathers, but Israel was not on the map as a nation entirely until the time of David. I hope y'all see this. Read.
Equally important, David created the machinery that carried out the day-to-day administration of his kingdom. Several lists of officials found in the biblical record provide a glimpse of the inner workings of David's kingdom. 2 Samuel chapter 8, verse 16 through 18, 1 Chronicles chapter 18, verses 15 through 17, 1 Chronicles chapter 27, verses 32 through 34. Given the circumstances he inherited, David's accomplishments were enormous. He gave Israel a stable political foundation upon which his son Solomon would build.
His son Solomon built upon it. Now we're going to go to page 107 and read about his son Solomon. Read that.
The reign of Solomon, 960 to 922 BC. The golden era of Solomon's reign brought Israel four decades of peace and prosperity.
How long did Israel have peace and prosperity?
Four decades.
A decade is 10. Four of them is 40. That's 40 years. That's about how long Solomon reigned. So Solomon was the beneficiary to all the hard work that his father David had put in and all the conquering that he did, because Solomon didn't fight no wars. It was times of peace when Solomon was in power. Reading on.
Solomon inherited a kingdom whose borders stretched from Gaza into central Syria.
Wow. Central Syria. From Gaza into central Syria. Central Syria, Syria is going into Euro-Asia, man. Or what they now today call the Middle East. It used to be called Asia Minor. That's how vast the kingdom of Israel was. Read on.
This mastery gave him control of important segments of the major trade routes, the International Coastal Highway and the King's Highway.
Wow.
Solomon used these vital arteries, ultimately touching all the Near East, to create a network of trade relationships that funneled enormous wealth through his kingdom. Solomon expended his new wealth on an ambitious building program that gave Israel the outward trappings of an important political power.
That would be the temple. Read.
Our major sources for this period include Kings chapters 3 through 11 and 2 Chronicles chapters 1 through 9. But archaeology has also cast light on the material culture Solomon fashioned. On the material culture Solomon fashions.
All right. So let's get Revelation chapter 6 and read verse 2 again.
And I saw.
Go ahead.
And behold, a white horse, and he that sat on him had a bow, and a crown was given unto him. And he went forth conquering and to conquer.
So the white horse is a righteous horse, talking about Christ, but then it extended on to the Israelites by way of our forefathers who conquered all the territories that were allowed it to the Israelites, to us, by way of the Most High, man. This is what it's talking about. We just read it. Now we got to get a description on how these people look so we can make this realistic, man, and tie all of this history in so we can get a clear view. Let's go to Songs of Solomon, chapter 1, verse 1.
Songs of Solomon, chapter 1, Father, Father, one mm-hmm. Okay.
You got it?
Yes, sir.
Read.
The Song of Songs, which is Solomon.
Mm-hmm.
Let.
It says, the Song of Songs, which is Solomon. So Solomon wrote this. Now jump down to verse 5.
I am black, but comely, O ye daughters of Jerusalem, as the tents of Kedar, as the curtains of Solomon.
Solomon said he was black but comely. The word comely means beautiful or handsome. So Solomon is letting us know, letting the reader know, he's a black man. Now remember, this is Solomon, the king of David. So if Solomon said he was a black man, and wouldn't that make his father a black man also? Let's get Acts chapter 13. People be reading right over this stuff, man. Be right up on our nose like the Bible is a fictitious book or something, and it's not. The Bible's real, man. And that's why I'm doing this in an effort to show us that this is not fictional. This actually happened. And these people whose hands it happened by were black people. Acts chapter 13, verse 22.
Okay. And when he had removed him, he raised up unto them David to be their king.
Uh-huh. Solomon's father. Read.
To whom also he gave testimony and said, I have found David, the son of Jesse, a man after mine own heart, which shall fulfill all my will.
This is the Most High. He said, David is a man after my own mind. He's going to fulfill all of my will. What was the Most High's will? We read it in Revelation chapter 6 and verse 2. For David to do all the conquering that he did, because it was prophesied, it was written. Read on.
Of this man's seed hath God, according to his promise, raised unto Israel a Savior, Jesus.
So who came out of the loins of David? It was our Savior, Yahweh Shai, who the world knows as Christ. Now remember, this is David's lineage. The guy Solomon was black, right? And if Solomon was black, his father David was black also, right? So it says that Christ came out of the loins or the seed of David. Seed meaning semen, meaning DNA, heritage. So Christ is a black man also. Hebrews 7:14, please.
For it is evident that our Lord sprang out of Judah.
Right. It says that Christ came out of the tribe of who?
Judah.
Of Judah. Read.
Of which tribe Moses spake nothing concerning priesthood.
So, of which tribe? Because remember, the man Israel or Jacob had 12 sons, and one of his sons' name was Judah. But each son became a tribe. And it said that Christ came out of the tribe of Judah. Let's get Jeremiah chapter 14, verse 2. And let's get a description of what Judah looks like. I know these are basic scriptures, y'all, but you see how you can use a basic scripture to prove a point?
Mm-hmm.
It's what we call basic anyway to the world is not. Read that.
Judah mourneth, and the gates thereof languish.
So the tribe of Judah is in mourning. During this time of Jeremiah was the southern kingdom, known as the southern kingdom. And it was not just Judah. It was Judah, Benjamin, and some of the Levites that were there. But it says that the southern kingdom was mourning, the tribe of Judah, which Christ came out of. And remember, Christ was of the seed of David. And we already discovered that Solomon, David's offspring, was a black man. So that would make David a black man, which it will in turn make Christ a black man who came out of this tribe. Let's see what color they are. Read.
They are black unto the ground.
The Jews, because this is where you get the word Jew from, Judah. Jew is short for Jew. The Jews are what?
They are black unto the ground.
They're people of color. Y'all see this, right? Let's keep proving this. So if they're people of color, and this is the tribe that Christ came from, wouldn't Christ be a man of color also? Now let's go to Revelations, chapter 1. And And read verse 1. I want you to jump down to verse 13.
Revelation 1 and 1. The revelation of Jesus Christ.
So the revealing, because we already got this last week. The word revelations means to reveal. So the revealing of Christ, read.
Which God gave unto him.
Mm-hmm.
To show unto his servants things which must shortly come to pass.
Mm-hmm.
And he sent and signified it by his angel unto his servant John.
So he sent an angel to give John the Revelator this vision, these revelations or prophecies. And what was the first thing he revealed to him? 13. As if John didn't already notice. But this is more so for the reader. Not John the Revelator, who laid on Christ's bosom, who was known as Christ's disciple that he loved, the only disciple that lived to be an old man and died of old age, that wasn't martyred. He already knew what he looked like. This is for the reader. Read this.
And in the midst of the seven candlesticks, one like unto the Son of Man,
mm-hmm.
clothed with a garment down to the foot.
So Son of Man is talking about Christ. He's giving a description, giving us a description of what Christ looked like in his glory. Read.
And girt about the paps with a golden girdle.
So he had on a garment that went all the way out to his feet, and he had on a golden girdle around his midsection.
His head and his hairs were white like wool.
So it gives us the texture, and it gives us the color. White woolly hair, meaning gray, aged, full of wisdom. The only people that have woolly hair are so-called black people, man. Christ was a man of color, but it doesn't just stop there, Reed.
As white as snow.
Uh-huh.
And his eyes were as a flame of fire.
Meaning they were red. Christ drank wine. That's why his eyes were red. You read about that in the Gospels, read.
And his feet like unto fine brass.
And that's the part right there. His feet. Now giving a description of his skin. What did his skin look like? Fine brass. Brass is the derivative of brown. But it goes on, read.
As if they burned in a furnace.
Take brass, burn it, what color it turned? Black. Christ was a very dark-complected man. But mind you, this is what David would have looked like. Something similar to this. Maybe not as dark, but he was a man of color. And Solomon looked like this also. Men of color. The Israelites. People of color. This is very important. So once upon a time, people of color did reign. Even before the Dark Ages, which we're going to get into, give me Daniel chapter 10, verse 5. So John the Revelator got the vision of what Christ looked like. Daniel got one also. We're going to read this.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Daniel chapter 10, verse 5. Then I lifted up mine eyes and looked, and behold, a certain man clothed in linen,
mm-hmm.
whose loins were girded with fine gold of Uphaz.
Sounds familiar? We just read it in the Revelations. Read.
His body also was like the beryl,
uh-huh.
and his face as the appearance of lightning,
read.
And his eyes as lamps of fire.
Read.
And his arms and his feet.
His arms, because Revelation only gave his feet. But now we get his arms and his feet. Read.
Like in color.
In color, read.
To polished brass.
This is denoting what? Nationality. His ethnicity. Christ being a man of color. A black man. Now let's get Matthew chapter 1. We're going to roll through these, y'all. These, like I said, once again, are basic scriptures, but we need them to prove a point. So all of this is just to show that David was a man of color, basically. So Matthew chapter 1, now we're going to, because I made a bold statement, that the Israelites were also men of color. Matthew chapter 1, verse 1, and we're going to jump.
The book of the generation of Jesus Christ, the son of David, the son of Abraham.
So this is Christ's genealogy. So it tells you Christ was the son of David. We got that already. Came out of the loins of the seed of David. David was a black man. Solomon was a black man. But then it says the son of Abraham. So would Abraham have to be a black man also if Christ was? And we know that Christ came out of the loins of David. David was a black man. His son Solomon was a black man. Come on now. Read verse 2.
Abraham begat Isaac, and Isaac begat Jacob, and Jacob begat Judas and his brethren.
So, and Jacob begat Judas and his brother, talking about the, basically the 12 tribes, all the 12 tribes, people of color. I hope y'all seeing this. Read.
And Judas begat Perez and Zara of Tamar, and Perez begat Ezram, and Ezram begat Aram, and Aram begat Amminadab, and Amminadab begat Nahshon, and Nahshon begat Salmon, and Salmon begat Booz of Rahab, and Booz begat Obed of Ruth, and Obed begat Jesse, and Jesse begat David the king, and David the king begat Solomon of her that had been the wife of Uriah.
Yeah, see this, always, so Christ's lineage is being traced all the way back to Solomon, who we already discovered was black, David, who already discovered was black. Read.
And Solomon begat Rehoboam, and Rehoboam begat Abiah.
Finish.
And Abiah begat Asa.
All right, now jump down to verse 11.
And Josias begat Jeconias and his brethren about the time they were carried away to Babylon.
And it's got the Israelites' captivity in Babylon. Now remember, this is the genealogy of Christ. This is what happened to Christ's people, who were what color once again? Black people, people of color. Read. Yep.
And after they were brought to Babylon, Jeconias begat Salathiel, and Salathiel begat Zerubbabel, and Zerubbabel begat Abiud, and Abiud begat Eliakim, and Eliakim begat Azor, and Azor begat Zadok, and Zadok begat Achim, and Achim begat Eliud, and Eliud begat Eleazar, and Eleazar begat Mathan, and Mathan begat Jacob, and Jacob begat Joseph, the husband of Mary, of whom was born Jesus, who is called Christ.
Y'all see that? They started way back and came all the way up to Christ's father and his mother in Christ being born. Read.
Verse 17. So all the generations from Abraham to David are 14 generations.
Read.
And from David until the carrying away into Babylon are 14 generations.
Mm-hmm.
And from the carrying away into Babylon unto Christ are 14 generations.
So we basically just read the genealogy and the happenings of what happened to Christ's people. And Christ, once again, being a man of color, which would make all these people that was named the nation of Israel, people of color, man. I hope y'all see this. Luke chapter 3, verse 23.
And Jesus himself began to be about 30 years of age, being, as was supposed, the son of Joseph, which was the son of Heli, which was the son of Matthat, which was the son of Levi, which was the son of Melchi, which was the son of Janna, which was the son of Joseph.
Now, and we read in Matthew, it went backwards, but this one here is going from Christ and Christ's father, and it's going backwards, and it's going to take us all the way down to Adam. What verse are you in?
Just finished.
Read verse 31.
Which was the son of Meleah, which was the son of Manan, which was the son of Manasseh, which was the son of Nathan, which was the son of David.
Now jump down to verse. So we got David, verse 33.
Which was the son of Amminadab, which was the son of Aram, which was the son of Ezram, which was the son of Perez, which was the son of Judah.
Right. Read.
Which was the son of Jacob.
So we got Judah, which is one of the 12 tribes. Now we're going to Jacob, our progenitor, read.
Which was the son of Isaac, mm-hmm. which was the son of Abraham, which was the son of Sarah, which was the son of Nahor.
Keep going.
Which was the son of Seruk, which was the son of Ragal, which was the son of Phalek, which was the son of Heber.
Right, and it's Heber in the Old Testament, and the Greek is Heber, which stands for where the language Hebrew came from. Read.
Which was the son of Salah, which was the son of Cainan, which was the son of Arphaxad, which was the son of Sem, which was the son of Noah.
So the Sem is talking about Shem. It said Noah. Noah, which means Noah. Read.
Which was the son of Lamech.
Uh-huh.
Which was the son of Methuselah, which was the son of Enoch, which was the son of Jared, which was the son of Malaleel, which was the son of Cainan.
Now, listen to this part. This is why I did all of that, y'all. Now, this is Christ's lineage. We did all of that to get to this one verse. Read.
Which was the son of Enoch, which was the son of Seth, which was the son of Adam.
Which was the son of who?
Adam.
Adam, read.
Which was the son of God.
And Adam was the son of God. Now, this is Christ's lineage, all the way back to Adam. But what did Adam look like? Give me Genesis 2 and 7, please. Remember, this is Christ's lineage, all the way back to Adam. Read.
And the Lord God formed man of the dust of the ground.
Of the what?
Dust of the ground.
Yes, he did. So the original man, Adam, was made from the dust of the ground. What color is the ground, y'all? It's various shades of brown. Remember, once again, this is Christ's lineage, going all the way back to Adam. Adam was a man of color. Christ came from a man of color. So David, man of color. Solomon, man of color. The Israelites, men of color, people of color. Now let's get 2 Ezra chapter 6 and verse 54.
6 and 54?
Yep. Now we got what these people look like. Now let's get this right here. Watch this. Read.
And after these, Adam also, whom thou madest Lord of all thy creatures.
Adam was made Lord of all creatures. And Adam was not there by him lonely, by himself. It was a group of people collectively referred to as the Adamites, named after Adam. No different than us Israelites are collectively called after our father's name, Jacob, or Israel, the nation of Israel. Read.
Of him come we all.
And we all, every man upon the face of the planet came out of Adam. Because remember, after the flood, Noah's three sons who came from Adam repopulated the earth. Read.
And the people also whom thou hast chosen.
Which will be who? The Israelites, like he chose the Adamites. Read. In Adam's time. Read on.
All this have I spoken before thee, O Lord, because thou madest the world for our sake.
So what's so important about these Israelite people? Read that part again.
Because thou madest the world for our sake.
The Most High made the world for our sakes. So when we read in Revelation chapter 6 and verse 2 and about David conquering, our forefather Joshua conquering, it was supposed to be. The Most High was putting things back in order from during the time of Adam. This is why he had to go and reconquer that land. That's what we were kicked out of in the first place. That's where the garden was. All historical facts point to that land being where the garden was, the land of Canaan, which now is the land of Israel. We know it's defiled now. It's not our land anymore, but the original land belonged to us. Go back and reference Genesis, the second chapter. Read on.
Verse 56, people which also come of Adam.
The other nations, not the Israelites, read.
Thou hast said that they are nothing.
They ain't nothing, read.
But be like unto spittle.
He calls them spit, worthless, read.
And hast likened the abundance of them unto a drop that falleth from a vessel.
Insignificant. Read on.
And now, O Lord, behold.
What verse is that?
57.
Hold on, wait a minute. I want to read that far. No, I don't want to read that far. We got the point. Exodus 4:22. So the world was created for these brown people's sake. For these brown people. That's why the Most High created the world. For brown people, the Israelites.
Mm-hmm.
Exodus 4:22.
And thou shalt say unto Pharaoh, thus saith the Lord, Israel is my son.
What does the Most High say?
Israel is my son.
Just like Adam was his son. Y'all remember we read in Luke, chapter 2 in the last verse. Now let's get Psalms 147, verse 19, verse 20. Yeah, read.
He sheweth his word unto Jacob.
But he is the Most High, read.
His statutes and his judgments unto Israel.
He gave us the commandments, read.
He hath not dealt so with any nation.
He ain't dealt so with no other nation. Remember, we just read in 2 Ezra, he said the rest of the nations were nothing to him, insignificant. Read.
And as for his judgments, they have not known them. Praise ye the Lord.
Amos 3:1. Oh, we're going past that, y'all. Just let you know. That was the 90-second mark. We're going to go a little longer.
Okay. Amos chapter 3 and verse 1. Hear this word that the Lord has spoken against you, O children of Israel.
He's speaking against us because we went against him.
The whole family which I brought up from the land of Egypt, saying, you only have I known of all the families of the earth.
He's only dealt with the Israelites. Read.
Therefore, I will punish you for all your iniquities.
Luke chapter 1, verse 68.
Blessed be the Lord God of Israel.
Of who? The whole
Israel.
World. He's the God of Israel. Only the Israelites. Read.
For he has visited and redeemed his people.
Visit and redeem his people, which are known as the Israelites. I hope everybody's seeing this, man. Now, give me Revelation chapter 6 and verse 2 again.
And I saw, and behold, a white horse, and he that sat on him had a bow, and a crown was given unto him. And he went forth conquering and to conquer.
Now, this is talking about Christ, but like I said, it extended to the children of Israel. And this is why, specifically David. David conquered all those territories. This was the vision that our forefather John the Revelator had received, that David was going to do this, but he already knew this. But the important part about this is, and when the Most High gives a vision, a lot of times he'll give a recap on some history that the person he gave the vision to already knew. So this is what's going on. So these things have already happened, but then, read on. You're in 2. Read verse 3.
And when he had opened the second seal, I heard the second beast say, come and see. And there went out another horse that was red.
So this is the second prophecy. And there went out from it a what?
Another horse that was red.
Once again, horse represents power. Give me Ecclesiastes chapter 10, verse 5. I'm sorry, Ecclesiastes 10, 5. So this horse is, this particular horse is red. We're going to get to the red part, but it's going to take me longer to break that part down. So we get to the horse. The horse is simple, and we went over it already. But just for your memory, I know how Israel be forgetting, because we saw remedial. Where we at?
Ecclesiastes chapter 10, verse 5.
Matter of fact, go straight to the point. Read verse 7.
I have seen servants upon horses. and princes walking as servants upon the earth.
A horse is a position of authority. If you're on top of a horse, you're in a position of authority. This is why Solomon said that he's seen something backwards happen. He's seen servants riding on horses and then the prince walking. So he's saying it's backwards. It's out of order. But to be on the horse is to be in a position of authority. So in Revelation chapter 6 and verse 3, let's read that part again. Yeah, you just keep holding that. We're going back to it.
I got it. And when he had opened the second seal, I heard the second beast say, "Come and see." And there went out another horse that was red.
So this horse represents what class?
Power.
Power. Another power, but this power was what color?
Red.
It was red. Can we match this with the Bible? Yes, we can. Let's go to Genesis, the 25th chapter. We want to start at verse 20. To find out who was this man, I'm sorry, I gave it away. Who was this power sitting on this horse? Who was this red person sitting in the position of power and authority? So Genesis chapter 25, verse 20.
And Isaac was 40 years old when he took Rebekah to wife, the daughter of Bethuel, the Syrian of Padan-Aram, the sister to Laban, the Syrian. And Isaac entreated the Lord for his wife because she was barren.
So
and
Isaac gets his wife pregnant, our forefather, Isaac, the son of Abraham. Read.
And the Lord was entreated of him, and Rebekah, his wife, conceived. And the children struggled together within her, and she said, If it be so, why am I thus? And she went to inquire of the Lord.
Moses said children. She's got two children at once. Those are known as twins. But she said, well, it says that the children were struggling. And she wanted to know why, what was going on. We're going to find out that these children were fighting. Read.
Verse 23. And the Lord said unto her, two nations are in thy womb, and two manner of people.
So he said, look here, you got two different nations in your womb. These two different nations, he goes on to say they have two different mannerisms, meaning they're different. This is why they're at odds with each other. This is why they're fighting. They don't get along. And they're still in the womb, and they don't get along. Read.
Two manner of people shall be separated from thy bowels, and the one people shall be stronger than the other people.
And then he goes on to name one of the distinct differences between the two of them. Yeah, they twins. Yeah, they come out the same womb, but one of them going to be stronger. So this lets us know that one of these nations is going to be stronger than the other nation. Read.
And the elder shall serve the younger.
It says the older is going to serve the younger. Whoa, whoa, whoa. Why would he mention that? Because this is backwards. You're supposed to have the younger serve the elder. But in this case, it's not going to be so. Read.
And when her days to be delivered were fulfilled, behold, there were twins in her womb.
Read on.
And the first came out red.
The first came out what?
Red.
He was what?
Red.
And what color did it say this horse was going to be in Revelations?
Red.
Let's read it again, Revelations.
And there went out another horse that was red.
That was red. This is the red horse in Genesis chapter 25 and verse 1. And this is the rider of that horse. Let's go back. This is the power that was coming into power in Revelation. So Genesis chapter 25 and verse 25 again.
And the first came out red all over, like in hairy garments. And they called his name Esau.
And this was the birth of Esau. Now, mind you, here in Genesis, the 25th chapter, his color's being mentioned. Why is his color being mentioned? Because we already got it, and we went down the list of the genealogy of the Israelites, our forefather Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And Jacob is our forefather. He had twin sons. But we find out one of his sons is what color?
Red.
Red. But we got the genealogy of the Israelites that went all the way back to Adam. And it said that Adam, see Genesis chapter 2 and verse 7, was made out of the dust of the ground. He was a brown man. Don't go there. That's why I just mentioned it as a reference. He was black unto the ground, meaning many different shades of brown. But this dude right here was not. He was the color of red. This was the birth of the so-called white man, y'all. Read.
And the first came out red all over like in hairy garment. And
he was red and hairy, just like who? So-called white man. Read.
And they called his name Esau.
Mm-hmm.
And after that came his brother out, and his hand took hold on Esau's heel. And his name was called Jacob.
So the fighting continued at birth. All the trimesters they was fighting. Then at birth they came out of the womb what? Fighting. They're arch enemies. They hate each other. They don't get along. Read.
And his name was called Jacob. And Isaac was 80 years old when she bare them.
Read.
And the boys grew. And Esau was a cunning hunter.
You got to love the Bible and the clues it drops. So this dude, Esau, red and hairy. Then we find out that he's a cunning hunter. The word cunning means skillful. The so-called white man is very skillful. This is why he has his duck calls. This is why he has his pheromones for deer hunting. This is why the taxidermist, anything dealing with hunting, this dude knows it. You can't dispute this, y'all. You can't. Read.
A man of the field.
He's a man of the field. We ain't going to get it because lack of time. See Matthew chapter 13, verse 38, which tells us that the field is the world. So it's just letting us know that this guy that's being born is going to be red and hairy. He's going to be a skillful hunter, and he's going to be a man of the world, meaning he was going to be all around the globe. He's never at the crib just chilling. He's always traveling somewhere, always in remote places. Places you think, like, what the hell are you doing over there? Read.
And Jacob was a plain man dwelling in tents.
But his brother was chilling. He was just dwelling in tents. What verse you in? All right. Now, give me that book right there. Tell them the title. And we're going to read page 5.
From Who is Esau Edom? By Charles A. Weissman.
A white man wrote this book.
Page 5.
Yep. Once again, I'm going to say it again. I'm speaking to the mic. A white man wrote this book. Read.
The Legacy of Esau Edom, Chapter 1. To help answer the question of who is Esau Edom, the first necessary step is to examine the racial and genealogical history of Esau and his descendants. Life and history of Esau.
So he's dealing with race. I hope y'all heard that. Now listen to what he says. Read.
Esau was the firstborn of Isaac and thus was heir to the birthright derived from the direct racial lineage of Adam to Noah to Abraham. Thus, Esau was racially an Adamite, a Shemite, and a Hebrew, the racial stock of the white race.
The what?
Racial stock of the white race.
Who is Esau?
The racial stock of the white race.
Hold on. Esau is the racial stock of the white race, meaning Esau is the progenitor of the white race, y'all. He's the father of them. You wonder where the white man comes from? He comes from Genesis, the 25th chapter. I hope y'all see this. I only pull this book to substantiate it because I know a lot of us ain't going to believe niggas. Let a white person say it, though. Y'all will believe it. this white man is saying that Esau comes from, or Esau is the father of the white people, the Caucasian man. Oh, y'all see this. Now, let's go back to Revelation chapter 6 and verse 4. We're going to piece our information that we got together now.
And there went out another horse that was red.
So horse represents power, and the rider of this horse, red. This is talking about the white race coming into power, y'all. Hope y'all seeing this.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
And power was given to him that sat thereon to take peace from the earth.
And he was given power to take peace from the earth, read.
And that they should kill one another.
Mm-hmm.
And there was given unto him a great sword.
And they won't be killing each other. And it was given to them a great sword. Talking about, let's get Genesis chapter 27 now. In verse 38.
And Esau said unto his father.
Now, what's going on is Jacob goes in, dresses Esau, and gets the blessing. Because remember, we read it in the Bible and that book, Who's Esau, Who's Edom, that Esau was the direct heir. He was supposed to get the blessing. But you go back to Genesis chapter 25, and you find out that Esau sold his birthright to Jacob for some meat. Some undone meat and some lentils. So Jacob goes in, dressed as his brother, gets his brother's blessing. And Esau comes in afterward, and he's feeling kind of butthurt. Read that again.
And Esau said unto his father, hast thou but one blessing, my father? Bless me, even me also, O my father. And Esau lifted up his voice and wept.
Read.
And Isaac, his father, answered and said unto him, behold.
Now, he said, behold, because he told him once before, man, I gave your blessing away. But then he finds it in his heart. The Most High put this spirit on him to say, you know, I'm going to bless him anyway. And this is what his blessing was going to be. Read that part again.
Behold, thy dwelling shall be the fatness of the earth.
Man, you're going to have the best parts of the earth, man. You're going to have all the earth. There's going to come a time. You're going to have all of the earth. Read.
And the dew of heaven from above.
See? You're going to own everything. But don't the dew fall on the whole earth? He said, man, the earth's going to be your whole blessing. Read.
And by thy sword shalt thou live.
And how are you going to get this earth?
By thy sword.
Now, what does it tell us in Revelation chapter 6 and verse 4 about him? Can we read that again, please?
Mm-hmm. Revelation chapter 6, verse 4. And there went out another horse that was red, and power was given to him that sat thereon to take peace from the earth.
The Most High gave him power to take peace from the earth, meaning he was going to disrupt everything, conquer the whole earth. Read.
And that they should kill one another.
Read.
And there was given unto him a great sword.
And how did he manage to do all this conquering and stuff? With that great sword. But who gave him that sword? Let's go back to Genesis chapter 27 now. Verse 40.
And by thy sword shalt thou live.
His daddy, our forefather, Isaac, gave him this blessing by way of the Most High. He says, by the sword shall thy what?
Shalt thou live.
And read.
And shalt serve thy brother.
And shall serve thy brother. And that's us. We're going to get into that. Read.
And it shall come to pass, when thou shalt have the dominion, that thou shalt break his yoke from off thy neck.
And that's a preview of like verse, I believe, Revelation 6 and like verse 5 or verse 6. That's a preview of things to come. But what I want us to take from this is, who was sitting on this red horse? This is talking about the so-called white man and him coming into power. And I think this is a great place to stop. Because when we come back next week, Lord willing, we're going to get into specifically who this red man was that came into power that conquered most of the known living world during this time by way of sword, by way of weaponry, y'all. So I hope everybody got some understanding out of the class. Hope you got some edification. I know we've been jumping around quite a bit, but that's how you have to put the Bible together. The Water Mashaba for hooking up the broadcast. The Water, thank you, everybody, for tuning in. If you have any questions, please give me a call at area code 314-482-9110. Or if you just want to rap to a brother, you can hit me up as well. Hazda, you got anything? Any questions?
Yeah.
All right, y'all. Until next week, Lord willing, tell a friend to tell a friend to tell a friend to please tune in to Tazapa.
Tuesday.
Every
Tuesday.
And with that, y'all, we're going to say
Shalom.